Well, here we go, guys.
Yep.
How you feel, Zach?
I feel okay. I've just got a little bit of a cough.
Zach's got a hot tea over there. Yeah.
He sounds horrible.
He's got a little illness going on right now, it sounds like.
Yeah, I just went on a little run, you know, got the fresh air after sitting inside for like 2 days, and, you know, I guess it threw me off. I need to go outside more.
Tomorrow.
Mm. Oh, it's going to be a good day tomorrow. We're heading over to Ted's in the morning to do some shed hunting. Ted Miller. We're going to look for that buck. When was that? He got pictures of one of these bucks over his horizontal rubs.
It was right after he shot that buck.
Yeah, and this buck comes by the trail camera, actually after another buck.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, he comes by first
mm-hmm.
on camera, and then this other buck comes by, and the thing's got like his guts hanging out of his mm-hmm. side, like he's been gored or something. And Ted wants, there it is, and Ted wants to go and look for this thing tomorrow, see if we can find it. So that'd be kind of cool if we mm-hmm. could find that deer, because I'm sure the thing is dead. I mean, it's got to be dead. The footage is just insane. There's the video right there. So we're going to do that tomorrow.
Maybe explain what we're talking about to people.
Yeah, so everybody that's tuning in on Facebook Live right now.
Or either that or the iTunes podcast or whatever.
Right, right. Yeah, I guess wherever you're tuning in to the Hunting Public podcast, we're working with some new software on this episode that allows us to incorporate more video and maps and images and stuff into our live podcasts, into our video podcasts. And the video podcasts air on Instagram, Facebook Live, and YouTube.
And the main focus right now is on Facebook, is where you can view more of the, you know, video.
Yeah, that's where you can that's what the point of this software is, I guess. Is,
and do we plan on exporting that and then putting it on the YouTube channel as well?
It'll also go on the YouTube channel
later.
So, yeah, for anybody that's listening on, Podbean or iTunes, you can also go to the YouTube channel, The Hunting Public, or you can follow us on Facebook at The Hunting Public and watch these live podcasts as they're recorded, because they're going to be a little bit more interactive than just the audio version. Yeah. But on today's show, we're going to go into more of the mapping type strategy stuff. We get questions on that all the time, and it seems like it's hard for us to really dive in and explain what happened on a lot of these hunts
without showing a map.
Right, without showing a map.
Because there's a lot of things. Yeah, there's a lot of things that we try to explain, but it's hard to envision, and we understand that as a viewer.
Doing a lot of hand motions. Yeah. And it's just...
Oh, yeah. Even in a 10-15 minute show, it's hard for us to really sit down and explain every setup.
Mm-hmm. You know, they're all different.
From a mapping perspective. So this should be an interesting conversation, I think.
Also, just looking at a lot of our setups just from pans in a stand or on the ground, whatever it may be, you still don't really get that full perspective mm-hmm. of the surrounding area. You don't get that bigger picture. I know I talked to a lot of people. My dad is one specifically. Zoom out once for me. Zoom out. So he likes to see a wide view of everything rather than the small picture. So I think the mapping is going to help, of course.
Yeah, and the hunt that we're going to talk about is the one that Zach and I had in Missouri last fall, where we jumped the big 8-pointer
that ended up being found dead.
Yes, they actually found him dead. We've got the footage of it pulled up now. Greg's watching it over there, and it's where we jumped that big 8-pointer out of his bed and into this creek. Once we saw this buck, our strategy pretty much completely changed at that
mm-hmm.
at that point, you know, because we just jumped a mature buck out of his bed. You know, Zach and I are scrambling around, we're trying to get a shot at this thing. And
I'm yelling, "Warp, there's a giant in the creek."
Yeah, he's yelling at me, and I'm like trying to get a release on and an arrow knocked.
Just complete panic.
Oh, yeah, just ridiculous. But finally, I actually almost shot him.
Yeah.
Like, I got to full draw, and that was crazy because you were in the creek like 40 yards from me.
Yeah, and I was in the wide open, and we both had openings at him, but like you say in that video.
Right there where he stops, where you can see him behind that tree, I was about to shoot him right there at that spot. And, man, I didn't feel comfortable because I didn't know how far away it was.
Yep.
You know, I thought it was 40 yards plus, and I didn't want to just sling one at him.
Yeah.
Right. You know, but
right decision, I would say.
Yeah, but anyway, that buck works off, and we're going to discuss with you now kind of how this betting location sets up, because we're constantly talking about buck betting and how when you find it, it makes total sense why they're there. Right. And we can explain this better on the map.
Well, I also think what's funny and a little bit more of a background even is, remember we were sitting at your dad's that night and you were like, I'm thinking about going over here. You gave me the mouse and you're like, you're going to zoom in right to where I'm thinking of going. And sure enough, we both zipped right to the spot, so we can kind of acknowledge that theory based off of a wind direction that, you know, that we had the following day. Kind of just our thinking and how we come up with that. Because we did walk right to the X.
Oh, yeah, we both looked at this exact spot that we've got pulled up right now. We looked at this exact spot and we see all these habitat types converging. Basically what it is it's this river bottom that butts up against some hardwood timber and some rolling hills. So the river bottom's flat. Mm-hmm. The hills and hardwoods kind of funnel down into the river bottom at different points. Well, right here at this exact location is kind of that point where everything comes together. There's the creek runs up, the river bottom is all flat, and it's real tall and nasty. There's all kinds of thick cover out there. It butts up against this point of hardwood timber that runs down into the river. And on the map right now, we're showing you basically our strategy for the first day when we're coming in.
I think another main point here to talk about is right where that buck was bedded, he was on a crossing.
Yes,
There was a very defined crossing in the river. Now, not only was there that high wall that we are going to talk about or have talked about kind of behind him along the river, but right there specifically, there was a major crossing that you could see that the water was shallow there.
Right, and on the map right here, it looks like it's underwater, but it's actually not. It was fairly dry. We were walking right down that creek bed, and we accessed it from the south. We came up that dry creek bed, and most of you that have watched the footage remember when I was right up against that buck in his bed, he tore out of there and he took off across the creek, and he went to the southwest. He jumped into the creek, almost swam across, and then popped back up on the opposite side and ended up going to the southwest out into another big, thick bedding area, and we didn't see him again that night. But he gave away his bedding position, and it is right where we figured it would be. I mean, but, you know, the only way to know is to go in there.
Right.
Or set up way off of it.
Well, what our strategy was going in was to try to look for big tracks coming out of that area. And I think that we had just seen a couple and we weren't overly sold on the spot.
We just saw a lot of doe and fawn tracks, really.
We were seeing fawns up and standing in that creek, confused that we were coming in there. But I remember we just weren't sold on it. And that's, you know, of course, when we ran them over. But
that day that we were going in, first day, wind was out of the north-northwest, might have been out of the north, pretty light, and that's what we were thinking, was right here at the point of these hardwoods where they come down. There's a big steep bluff that runs from the northwest to the southeast along the edge of the river, and those hardwoods form a point where they fall off into that creek bottom. Right there where all that stuff converges, hardwood timber, creek bottom, creek itself, thick willow type cover, is where we assumed a buck would be bedded, because the wind is blowing out of those hardwoods down to that creek crossing where they're bedded at, and that buck is watching down the creek with the wind to his back.
The other thing that's
at that spot where all those habitat types converge.
And he's got escape routes to basically 360 degrees around him. Yeah, he's right at the point of that high wall. Mm-hmm. So and that high wall is also acting as a barrier for predators. So he knows nothing's going to come straight from the northwest of him there, but he can escape in basically any direction because he's got a creek crossing right there. A lot of times those deer won't bed right on the edge of the river if they don't have a good crossing or if it's too deep for them to cross.
Yeah, if it's too deep, yeah. That, like, he wouldn't have been bedded, if you can see in the footage, you know, he would not have been bedded up on top of that big bluff.
No, because he can't escape.
Because he can't escape that way. He's going to fall to his death if he has anybody come in from the north of him, you know. That's why he is located right there at the very base where that tip of hardwoods pours down And I think that that may even be why that crossing is there. You know, there's probably a lot of erosion and stuff that gets washed in off of those woods where that elevation change is. And there's lots of rocks in the creek right there where they could cross. And that's where he was at when we bumped him on the first day. He runs, he goes to the southwest. You know, Zach and I back off. And we try to go around and get set up and run into Mr. Neon and have a pretty fun hunt. Anyway.
Well, we were even trying to essentially set up for him to circle back downwind and come back into that same bed, because that is a strategy that we've used before. Well, he was back in
the same bed the next day, or
yeah.
at least in the same area. We're gonna talk about that as well. Mm-hmm. But the real key here is that we identified this spot before we went in as potential mature buck bedding. And I think both of us were kind of thinking this is almost too close to the road for a big one to be, because we were seeing hunter sign all over the place on the south side of the creek. But we had marked that spot before we even went out. We're like, you know what? We're going to probably walk through here, but I wouldn't be surprised there's a big one there. And sure enough, he was there. And it was set up on that wind direction perfectly. Now, fast forward one day later, Greg's got the day two map pulled up. You can see that the wind direction slightly shifted on day two. The first day it was out of the north-northwest. The buck was bedded down there. Second day it was out of the northeast. But that's kind of what we look for in these spots. That buck was there on a northerly wind. We figured with a northeast wind, it still sets up really well for him to bed in that exact spot that we just bumped him out of.
And the reason being is because he doesn't have to put his back in a up against the river.
Right.
So he's still looking, he's still able to look down that creek with that northerly type wind.
Yeah. So once we got home the night of after the hunt on day one, you know, and we realized, wow, we have almost the same conditions tomorrow, very similar wind. How do we go in and hunt this bed again, this buck that was there? Because we think like there's a good chance he's going to come back. He hasn't been that alerted to our presence. We basically just scared the heck out of him. And, you know, he didn't know what we were. So we devised this plan of coming in on the second day. And you can see that our access route is much different than it was on the first day. Basically, what we ended up doing was going all the way to the west edge of the public property and going clear up and around this bedding area. And if we would have took the same access path that we would have the day before, you know,
same outcome.
Yeah, same outcome. We'd either bumped him or we'd have set up and the deer would have went to the north, which we'll talk about later. But this, the thought process here is that the buck is bedded at this point of hardwoods and they're feeding heavily on acorns during this time. Because earlier this fall, there was a good white oak crop, if I remember
right. Yeah, it was insane up there. Remember? Yeah. I mean, we were finding thousands, and we knew
that going into this hunt in Missouri. It was late September, wasn't it? Early October?
It would have been.
Might have been early October.
No, it was the last two or three days of September.
Yeah. Well, acorns are falling there. We know the deer are on them. So we think, you know, this buck is bedded at this point of hardwoods there. And the closest acorn food source that he has is right there to the north of his bed. So how do we kill him? We've got to get up on that hardwood ridge right above that bedding location. So we access from the west edge of the property, go all the way up around this deer, cross the river, and get up on top of that hardwood ridge. And it's not a perfect wind for us necessarily. The wind is blowing just off where we can kind of get away with it blowing over the creek without alerting that deer.
I mean, hardly though. Like it was, yeah. So in this situation, I remember we were dropping milkweed and it was just kind of sinking off to our right because we were facing towards where that buck was bedded.
Yep.
And it was just kind of sinking.
It was
off
almost
to our
a
right.
Crosswind.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't blowing straight from the buck to us. It was a crosswind. And that's the right wind for that buck to be bedded down there. You know, I mean, he's still got a real good wind to be bedded there.
I think it's interesting even more so on the day before where the wind was coming straight from the south. I mean, he's bedded straight downwind of where he's going to walk out to feed that day. So
right.
He knows that there's nothing up there, you know.
Right, exactly. And there was, to our point a minute ago, there was no big buck tracks in that creek.
No.
Like,
no.
He'd been bedding along the edge of that creek, and he may not have been using that very often. Like, he's using that as an escape.
Yeah.
But in the evenings for at least the last week, whenever you and I were walking in there, there wasn't hardly any sign.
Well, what was crazy then is
that's 15 feet from the buck.
Yeah. The day prior, or then the day after, so when we went way up and around him, I mean, right away we were like, this way he's going.
Yep.
Every night, because we were 300 yards from him when we first popped up in the woods there above him, and we were running into rubs, scrapes, the whole way down to where we set up.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing, was we got up on that ridge, and... yeah, we were just creeping down through there, just so quiet and so slow. I mean, it took us, it's a couple hundred yards that we walked down the center of that
ridge. Yeah, we figured 200-300 yards or whatever somewhere in there.
Yeah, and it took us forever.
And there was, took us a long time to get there and then also, like, pick the exact spot where we felt like we were close enough. And I remember we were like, could we go 20 yards further? And then we finally decided no. And then that obviously was the wrong move.
Uh-huh.
We just went the extra 20 yards. We'd have got a shot at him.
And y'all feel free to ask questions as we're going through this stuff. We'll answer them at the end.
I think one thing to keep in mind, too, is the wind direction. This is all wind-based. I mean, all this decision-making is wind-based. It's not, you know, it's not a perfect wind for us. But it's a perfect win for the deer. That's the main key here.
It's kind of just finessing, like, where he thinks it's perfect for him.
Yeah, the perfect win for us here is the south wind that's blowing up the ridge out of the river
straight
bottom.
Away from
but
him.
It doesn't make any sense for him to bed in the same spot on
mature
that wind.
Mature deer is not going to feel comfortable a lot of times moving straight with the wind out of his bed.
No, I mean, if he's bedded there on a south wind, he's looking into the base of that ridge, and it is super thick right there.
Like, he can see 0 yards, and he can smell just what's coming up the creek. He's not going to bed there. He's not going to do it.
No. This wind is sets up well for him. So, Zach and I are creeping through that hardwood ridge to the northwest of him. And we've got a northeast wind. We're seeing all that signs, and we know he's been coming up there. You know, that bucker and other bucks, whoever's using that bed, has
There's
been working their way up there. So, we decided to set the stand up, and this is where we made our mistake. We didn't go quite as far as we should have. In this situation... because Jake and I have been past this bed since we were in there in November while we were hunting the rut. Yeah, it was just completely tore up with sign. There'd been bucks bedded there all month, and after this guy had been out of there. But anyway, we realized that buck could not see very far out of that bed to the northwest.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's probably why he's bedded there with that wind coming from that thick stuff. But he couldn't see very far. We could have gotten within 100 yards pretty easily, but we got to right at 100 yards, and we're just worried that the both of us trying to get stands hung and everything in pretty quiet conditions.
It was really quiet conditions, if I remember right.
It was. And we didn't spook anything. I mean, there was a fawn, I guess, that we kind of rubbed off on the way in.
That thing came back. Remember, yeah, it was feeding like 15 yards.
It was feeding
yards.
15
was...
yards while we were getting the stands hung.
So
we hung the stand 100 yards from the bed. Or at least that's what, you know, Google Earth measurements say.
And we were measuring it on the way in.
Oh, yeah, we were. We were trying to get as close as we could possibly get. When we were getting there, right where we're at on the top of that ridge, we're looking down into that thick stuff. Like, we can see it. Mm-hmm. It's 60, 70 yards away, and we're like, anywhere in that transition, a deer could be bedded.
Yep.
And if we blow one of them out of there, we may just blow the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we set up right there.
Maybe just go over what the condition... I mean, it was warm that time of year.
It was pretty warm. It wasn't great.
I think we were in, like, pants and t-shirt. A light t-shirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Probably could have been shirt. Like, it was hot, if I remember.
Yeah, it was 60, at least 60 degrees.
Yeah.
It was fairly warm. Not a crazy good cold front or anything like that. It was just a pretty average day for that time of the year. But we got set up and go ahead and pull up our last map there, Greg. We're 100 yards from the buck when he's in his bed. And we're sitting there, and I think we had some does and stuff come out of the bedding area.
I think the first, other than that fawn, I think the first deer we saw, we're like, there's some deer coming, you know, and here comes two fawns, and then a doe kind of meanders on the edge of the woods, and she goes, looks up at us for like half a second.
And gone.
Yeah! Get out.
Yeah. She blew out of there.
She blew and then she ran.
Amount,
she
or
blew.
Just once?
I think she a couple times. I don't think it was anything crazy, but like
it was
she
early
got
when
out.
She came out of the bedding area, and she came from
same way that we expected him to come from.
Yeah, kind of. They came more out of the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
out of the thick stuff to the north of where the buck was bedded. Mm-hmm. So the buck would have been kind of bedded downwind of those does.
Yep.
But they came out of there, busted us, and took off. They did not go the direction of the buck. They ran back into the bottom to the east-northeast and blew and carried on and everything for a while. But they that was a good hour and a half almost before dark, if I remember right. It was over an hour anyway.
It was a long time.
Yeah. So we're sitting there kind of bummed, but at the same time we're thinking, if we're going to kill this thing, he's going to come in here at last light. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, with about 15 minutes of legal light left, I saw something move. And another crazy thing about this stand setup is the trails that the does came up on, just east of the stand, were beat down. I mean, there was fresh tracks. You could tell, like, that was where the majority of the deer were coming up out of there. However, that trail across the top of the ridge through the thick stuff, we noticed was pretty faint, but there was mm-hmm. a bunch of fresh buck turds on
it. Yeah, and I mean, I remember we were like, this is the spot. You know, we obviously
should...
This is
the trail that he's going
to
come
right,
up on.
And we were like, we should be able to shoot both. And we actually got ourselves into a position where we were kind of in, you know, the triangle of the two trails. Yeah, so we could have shot
that doe. Yes. We could have been drawn back and shooting her right when she busted us.
Yep.
You know, so if that had been him, he'd have been in trouble.
Yep.
But he came up the quote-unquote buck trail is what we assumed it was.
On right towards us, too.
Right at the stand. And with 15 minutes of daylight, of legal shooting light left, shall I say. And
you could actually see him, but barely. And I remember you were telling me, you're like, he's in there, but like I can't see him. He's moving so slow. Yeah.
He's moving so slow. At this point, he's made it 70 yards from his bed.
I think you even said, like, it may just be a raccoon. I think it's just a raccoon. No, it's a deer. That's got to be a deer. I mean, that was the kind of conversation we were having.
It was not like the does coming up through there. You know, those does, they made 50 yards in a matter of minutes, if less than that. You know, and I heard a twig break and looked down there and I saw just maybe, it must have been a glimpse of his antlers moving through there. And it was just him putting his head down, eating acorns and lifting it back up. And then I didn't hear anything for like 5-10 minutes. Like, he didn't move.
Yeah.
He was just standing there munching on acorns in one spot. And then he took a couple of steps. And I was like, that is a deer. It's got to be a deer. But I'm telling you, it was so quiet. We could hear those does coming from 75 yards. This thing's at 20 steps and you can barely hear him.
Yeah.
Because he's moving so slow. Like, he's just kind of, he'd lift his leg up and it would take him 15 seconds to take a step. It's crazy. Like, and finally I saw him down through there. And as soon as I saw him, I was like, that's him. Like, that's that buck.
Yeah,
that we
I
jumped.
Remember you said that.
For sure. And it's we had...
So when we saw yesterday.
We had like 5 minutes left, maybe 10.
Yeah, maybe one.
And the deer...
I'd been out of camera light for some time.
There's so many leaves on the trees.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. I guess legal light would have been after the end of camera light at that time of the year because of all the leaves and stuff. But yeah, there were still a few minutes left of legal. And he's in bow range at this point. Like, you can see on our map that we've drawn up here that... I've drawn the buck's path of travel leaving the bed. And right at the end of that dotted line is kind of where he was at the end of legal light. And he needed to take about 5-6 yards worth of steps to his right, it'd be our left, to the southeast of the stand there, for me to be able to get a shot. And he just didn't do it. You know, it just got dark. And eventually, right at dark, we heard him lay down. Mm-hmm. Like, that thing just laid down right there. Mm-hmm. Like, it was the most noise that he'd made the entire time. And he laid down right there at the base of the tree. So, in hindsight, with everything that we'd done up to this point, like, all the thought process that went into this particular hunt and getting around this deer, mm-hmm. we're 10, 15 yards away from killing him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we would have moved in just a little bit closer, and you hear Dan Infault talk about that all the time, you got to be inside that 100-yard bubble when you're hunting buck beds,
especially early season.
Oh yeah, especially early season. You can kill them, obviously. I mean, in this thing, mm-hmm. we'd have really had a good chance if we'd have just moved up a little further.
Yeah, and I don't think there was really even any more risk involved. Like you said too, the deer can't see you when they're bedded in that bottom. And it took us to, you know, obviously a little too long. Like, once you guys went back, you're like, they can't see you in the bottom. Like, it's that, you know, it's that simple. And then mm-hmm. you know, hunting around here too, we're like, by the end of the season, we knew that those deer weren't able to see us when we were coming down, you know, even into the late season because it's so much thick vegetation. Yep. But mm-hmm. I think our confidence at that time of the year, you know, hunting a new area, we just didn't
We didn't know the area quite well enough to have the confidence to go in another 20 yards.
Yep.
And we could have.
Yep.
And that's what really eats at me. You know, it's like me and Jake were in there and we're sitting there looking at that bed in early November and we're like, dang it. We could have got like 50 yards closer.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah, we were down there in November and you still couldn't see anywhere near where you guys were set up.
Yeah. I mean, so we got to 100 yards and it just wasn't quite far enough. But you see on the map, we've also drawn up where the hunting pressure is at on this piece. And there's lots of hunters on this place. Mm-hmm. And that buck is bedded right up against the creek both nights in a row on northerly winds. He's not going to the south. Right across that creek, 100 yards away, is where Mr. Neon was sitting.
Mm-hmm. You know? That day, he told us he was coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was sitting there. He was there again, like that day. Yeah. And that buck is not going that direction because he smells humans that way. That's the direction where he encounters people. And we've got the hunting pressure arrows drawn on here. Mm-hmm. All across the south side of that creek is where people hunt.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the only way that public access is to the south there.
Yes, yes.
I think another...
And that was another thing, like, our access on this day, we had to crawl up a rock bluff to get up there.
We were bleeding and going through thick stuff. Like, it was... Yeah. We were pretty miserable about halfway through. But I think another thing that, you know, if I guess... We keep saying that we were going in, you know, after this buck, because that's the buck that came
through. Yeah, it wasn't necessarily true.
That's an area that we, you know, we saw enough, as soon as we were up on that ridge coming from the oaks down to where we eventually set up, we were like, bucks bed here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And mature bucks. Mm-hmm. Well, not used, just him.
Well-used buck. Well, after we had the fall we did there, I mean, we saw several other mature bucks
seemed
in
like
the area.
Every time we went out, we would see a different mature buck.
Yeah, and that was one of their core mature buck bedding areas.
Yep.
Like we just, it was a good chance we were going to see him again because of the nature of which we spooked him. You know, he didn't see what we were. And a lot of times they'll come right back to that bed because they're just startled by something and they don't know what it was. And that's what happened in this case. But that's another thing with these buck bedding areas. Once a mature buck leaves that spot, another one will come right back in there.
Well, like, I think another reason, at least from my perspective, that gave us enough gave me the confidence to go right back after it was like the Nebraska thing. Fairly similar setup. Mm-hmm. You know, you bump them out of there, and then you go back in a couple days later, and there, you know, there's that same deer.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, you just hear so much that you got to stay out of a bedding area. I know we harp on this
a lot. Obviously, we're not going like 3-4 days in a row.
Right.
No. We're going in for the kill.
Yeah.
Like, and we miss it by just that much.
And then we move on, you know, I guess. Yeah. And from a different, you know, a different hunting situation where you're hunting private land, you pick those, or a small property, or even a small piece of public property, whatever it may be, you make that decision to go in there for that kill on the day that you have the most confidence with the right conditions.
Yep.
You know, luckily for us, we have enough, you know, places to go scout that we can go for the kill when it's 80 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what we did there.
Yeah. Second day of season in Iowa, it was 80 degrees and Jake and I are crawling to where we found a bunch of buck beds in the summer, you know, like trying to get within 100 yards of it.
Yeah.
It's just,
And that's just the thing though, too. We got within 100 yards of this buck. He comes in, lays down. We pull the stands down with him laying there 15 steps. And it took us with the lights on, you know, it took us forever. We're just standing there shining our lights on each other as we're handing each other the sticks and the stands and everything, just going so slow. It took us an hour and a half to get out of there.
There's a good question there, the bottom one.
But I think eventually we did get down, and after we got down, we heard him get up, and he walked right by us.
Yeah.
You know, we just killed the lights. We just stood there, and you can just hear him walk right by us and right up the ridge where we had come in from.
Yeah. I mean, he was close, like really close. And there was other deer as we were taking the stands down, milling around, that you could hear back up on the ridge, higher up, eating acorns and stuff. And I know it sounds crazy, but if you really take your time, I promise you can do it. Mm-hmm. You just got to like...
Well, that thing went right by us. He had no idea we were even in the world.
If you make the, you know, like a ting or something, you know, just stop.
Stop.
And just be patient
for
a couple of minutes.
Oh, yeah, you're going to make noise, no doubt about it.
I remember...
That's the thing. Consecutive noise is what they pick up on. One out of place sound isn't going to blow the whole deal most times. And in this situation, it's early season. They haven't seen a ton of pressure yet. It makes me think,
when Luke killed that big buck this year, what the noise that we heard to make us turn around to see that buck was in the, when that buck jumped over a barbed wire fence. So, I mean,
yeah, he climbed the fence.
Animals are making that.
When they hear those noises or any noise, the twig break in the wild, you'll just see him whip that head over and stare in that direction for at least several seconds, minutes if it's a mature buck sometimes.
A mature doe, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah, same way. But they eventually give up on it, otherwise they'd be stuck in concrete all the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's what always makes me laugh. Let's
take some questions on.
Yeah, Jake's got a good one here.
Got one on Instagram. It says, do you think if the buck would have saw you guys, would you have went back and hunted him right away? Referring to the Missouri buck, because you guys you kind of caught him off guard and he hopped across the creek and didn't really act like you knew what happened.
I think we'd have hunted that bedding area again, regardless. Because like we said...
that buck that we jumped in Nebraska that you ended up killing, this one...
he's over here.
Right there, that one. He knew that you were a human being. Like he for sure saw you and smelled you. Mm-hmm. We were trying to wind bump it, and what was it, 2-3 days later we were in there?
I think 2 days we were in there, third day shot him.
But did we go back the next day? I'm pretty sure we did. It might have been 2 days.
I think wind bump, wait a day, hunt, and then kill.
Okay. But yeah, he was there 3 days later.
Yep.
Which, I mean, and like we said, more bucks will move in there. A different buck could be in there the next day.
If there's enough of them around.
Yeah, if there's enough of them around. If you're hunting one specific buck and, you know, he tears out of there and he sees you, smells you, and then maybe not. Mm-hmm. But in our case, we're pretty opportunistic, you know. It could have been, you know, that buck's grandson that came in and I'd have probably shot him.
There's like a mentality, too, of like the deer. I don't know if mentality, but... just watching their body language is generally enough for us to give us enough confidence or not. Like, there was a time, I think in 2016, I was with Preston, where I shot that one in 15.
Yep.
And we're going in, and there was a place that we'd thought, you know, bucks might bed. Sure enough, we pop out of the river too close to it, and he saw us, and he got out of there.
Yeah, he tore
out. He ran so fast and like, nah, that was not going
at that 8-pointer at all.
Well, right, not going back and hunting that deer. Like he won't be there for a couple days after that. But on the other hand, even that buck that we saw when we were going in with the decoy that one morning,
yeah,
he saw and knew something was wrong. But it was because we didn't have enough cover.
He bounded away like this and then stopped and then took some more
around.
And
they don't know what happened.
He didn't put his head down and just dart out of there. Never
you can tell. I mean, I've bumped him before where you spook him and you're like, holy cow, is that that deer that dot over there like 2 miles away still running? Yeah, that happens. And then when that happens, you know, it's probably time to start over.
We got some more questions on that.
All right, what do you...
Did you find issues with thermals along the water?
Did we find issues with...
Do you find issues with thermals along water features near sunset?
Sometimes I would say that the water, if it's moving fast enough too. Now, this is a stream that's not really moving.
It was
much.
Really dry. Like most, I mean, there were spots in that creek where there was no water.
Our area in general, though, compared to like where in southern Missouri, I know you'd get it in Wisconsin, you get it definitely in Ohio, you get it. Like where you get that actual like moving stream.
Yeah,
that's
sometimes
gonna play,
they'll suck it down.
That's
going to
play more so than like in
even
Northern
though when
Missouri
you have a
Iowa.
Pond or you have a lake or a river in this situation that's more stagnant and still, once the temperature starts falling and lasts light, that water will still pull. Mm-hmm. Like you'll still get that light thermal pull into the water. I learned that from Dan too. Mm-hmm. He's got video of it in one of his hunts, you know, where he's dropping milkweed and it's going into the into the pond. It's like bathtub water, you know.
I think we had some footage of that, too, this year.
Yes, we did.
Where me and you hunted along the river there, and it just kind of sucked right down into the river.
Yep. And in this situation, I don't think we were far enough from the edge of the river. We were, like, up a giant bluff and 40 yards from the edge of the bluff still. Yeah. I don't think we were getting any thermal pull.
Related to this Missouri buck here, did you guys try to or want to find out where he was bedding on different winds, like a south wind or any other wind?
I think we were just generalizing other bedding locations, not necessarily him, but he would probably use some of those bedding areas that we see. Like when we, our thought process when we go into looking at that spot is just like, that's this, you know, that's our favorite spot for a north wind.
Yeah, because that day we're like, okay, we got a north wind. Where's the best locations for the north wind? And we're thinking that is one of the best spots. And we actually found another one that was further up in the timber there that we didn't even get to because we bumped that buck. Then later on in the fall, Jake and I went back in there and we had a west wind. So we ended up hunting further to the east about a mile or so.
Yeah.
And we're basically hunting the same habitat features that this buck was bedding in, the eight pointer, you know, except on the opposite side.
Yep.
And there was buck in there. We saw a big one that morning too.
And you got to think of our situation too. Our situation is, you know, we've got this one big river bottom and we're looking at it for, you know, maybe our favorite spots are only north winds. So on a south wind, we may be 3 miles down the river.
Yeah, we may go to a totally different area.
Yep. Same thing goes for a small piece of private land. Like for example, one of the places that I grew up in, my grandpa's farm, I grew up hunting it. Most of the deer bed there on that property, on a westerly or northerly type wind.
Yeah, so you're not hunting there on a south wind.
Yeah,
an east wind.
Well, we probably did too much when I was younger.
Yeah, but none of us knew any of this stuff then.
So, don't think about your setup, you know. Maybe, as sad as it may be, your setup may only set up for bucks to bed there on a west wind.
Especially on a small property.
Small
like
property.
Yeah.
Other things can happen that could possibly get a big one in front of you.
And there's rut situations that are totally different. I'm talking from the perspective of,
buck
just
bedding
straight up buck
all
bedding.
The rest of the year except for a rut.
Yep.
And in this river bottom spot where that big eight pointer's at, we noticed through the rest of the hunts that we had throughout the fall, most of the best buck bedding was right along the river where those crossings are for various winds. Mm-hmm. You know, it was never a wind blowing from the river to the river bank. Mm-hmm. It was always coming from the land side, blowing out across the river.
What else you got?
Nothing related to that Missouri hunt, just some speed round stuff.
Okay.
For later.
We need to get into shed hunting.
Yeah.
Greg's telling us we need to get moving here. We've been talking about this for a while. But, Jake and Brody were out yesterday?
Yep.
Is it yesterday already?
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday. Found a couple bones.
Yeah.
This is Big Boy, and this is also Big Boy.
Yeah. Which one did you find? Which one Brody
found? Found this one. And Brody found this one, obviously. Thought it might be a match set at first, but the bases are completely different. Mine has way bigger bases than Brody's. No, but they're both really nice deer.
Yeah, I mean, that thing's wicked cool.
Yeah. We had a good day yesterday.
Where did you find them at, exactly?
So, I don't know, we just kind of...
What were the coordinates of that?
What type of terrain?
I was talking to Zach before we went out and, like, basically mentioned all the spots I wanted to go. And he's like, nope. I'm like, where can we go that you don't want to go? So, like, me and Brody just went down to an area that's closed for most of the year until duck season closes. Then it opens up to deer hunting. And you guys...
We've hunted it.
You've hunted it, but you don't seem to scout it a lot
from
what we've talked about, because you can only hunt it for a couple weeks out of the year.
It's not
so
a main bow focus.
Well, Brody, these are probably going to be good spots to go, because, like, there's probably a lot of deer there, first of all. And, like I said...
Well, there's deer that don't get hunted.
Exactly.
But, like,
a week
out of every season.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, the whole late season. Yeah. Just the late season, I guess, is when they get
hunted. I knew our chances would be good to maybe find a shed, I guess. So, I don't know, we're just driving around, and... So it looked good to us, and we saw that there's fields, and we were just curious to see if they were standing in anything or if the DNR had planted anything. And sure enough, there was cornfields on both sides of the public, and like all the bedding is square in the middle of these two cornfields. And we just came walking off the cornfield down off the, it kind of drops into the river bottom there.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you basically have corn on top, then you have a side hill of hardwoods.
Yep.
And that's it drops maybe 100 yards wide, and then it drops into...
Pretty steep drops off into, like, the nastiest river
marsh.
Or lake bottom.
It's not really even hardwoods, though. It's more of that brushy...
Yeah, I kind of noticed that.
It's, like, kind of a brushy, you know, young forest.
There are oaks in there, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, it's not...
Were these deer bedded in there, or were they transitioning?
No, so there was those, I guess what I would call them is the nighttime beds where they're feeding on that cornfield, then they just like lay down and chew on their cud basically like a cow would, you know.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a ton of beds. Most of the beds were down in the bottom, and that's where we jumped, as I was going to say, we jumped, what was it, 4 or 5 bucks yesterday, Brody, that all still had their antlers. But we got some good scouting done, and we learned where bucks like to bet in that bottom, obviously. So
I think that's something that I'd like to talk about a little bit.
I'll say this first. Obviously, this is public land that we're going on.
Yes.
And other people have access to it, obviously. So we just want to get out there as much as we can.
Yes.
Like, people could walk it any time of the year. We know it's a different situation if you have private land or just a spot that you can control that nobody else can
That's
go
what
into.
I was gonna say.
We wouldn't do the same thing there, but this is public land. We just want to get out and scout, and then hopefully we pick up a couple of these. But
exactly.
Yeah. More and importantly, we found where bucks were bedded. Like, yes. That's what's going to help us kill deer next fall.
That isn't going to help you kill the deer. What finding the buck bed is going to, though. And, you know, the thing, like Jake was just saying, that's that we get a lot of questions of when should we start scout, you know, shed hunting on public land. Honestly, today, because yesterday, you know, if you weren't on, you know, if you wait too
shed
many
hunting
days.
Around here is like ultra competitive.
Yeah.
And we don't really
and it
get
is,
too
well, and it's
crazy
going to
about
be,
it, but.
It's going to be in another state even more so.
Yeah.
So, for example, your states like, obviously, like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Missouri, Ohio,
yeah,
Nebraska,
but like,
whatever.
We get a lot of people that travel down here that don't have tags
well,
that come down here just to go shed
right,
hunting.
Right, and I would agree, but point being is there's no shed police out there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, there's nobody saying you can't go. So get out there, scout, and just have some fun, you know. That's what shed hunting is all about, is scouting, learning something new and having fun with your buddies out in the woods. It's a time frame where you can go out.
Yeah,
and
the weather's been perfect the last few days for walking. You know, it's 40s, 50s during the day.
Yeah.
It's perfect walking
and something
weather.
I'll say is we didn't learn anything from finding these two sheds, but you can learn a lot from finding sheds in beds. I mean, that's basically just giving away.
I mean,
location
we learn a lot from finding deadheads.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
And just
or
anything.
Finding them in like oddball food sources too. Like, you know, let's say we would have never found our, you know, buck nest, our second buck nest there, and we'd just stumble out into that bottom of that duck potato and find a bunch of sheds, we'd be like, oh man, they're eating this
Me
stuff.
Me and Brody
heavy.
Yesterday when we were walking, I was telling you guys about it, but it was planted in the CRP maybe 3-4 years ago, it looks like, when you look at the old maps or whatever, but it's just clover grown up into the CRP field, and there was deer feeding in there heavy. And I think that's probably a spot a lot of people don't know about unless you've been walking around down in there.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, great finds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For sure, dude.
Let's get those little guys up there.
Yeah.
I like those, too.
Yeah.
Want to tell them about that one.
This one we found on the road. We were driving pretty much in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, you want to turn around and go get that antler?
We were not too far from the public.
No,
actually.
No.
We were going from...
It was probably the closest bedding habitat to where we found the shed, actually.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Like, you always hear about people wanting to find road sheds, and like, this is a literal on-the-road shed.
This might have popped somebody's tire.
Yeah.
We found them off the road before, too. Mm-hmm. Just like, slam on your brakes, like, what was that?
Yep. But I'm excited to go tomorrow again and try to help.
Yeah,
we'll
go down there with Ted. I bet we're going to learn something.
Is there any questions about shed hunting that we have?
We need to get to? We also have another video journal that should be up fairly soon about basically it's one of our big timber spots. Zach, you were scouting it the other day, and you and Greg had a good hunt in there. I think Greg's going to pull up some of the footage from that buck that you saw.
Yep. On sometime in late... Ooh, look at that glove.
October 30th was
October
the day.
October 30th?
Yep.
We went in and we were hunting a big ridge top, and it ran parallel to some, you know, big bottom ag fields. And this area has a bunch of big timber in it compared to most of the areas that we hunt. And the strategy going in was just trying to hunt bucks back in the timber where they would be crossing doe trails. So basically just crossing from where the does are feeding to where they're bedding, crossing their trails, trying to find a hot doe.
In that spot, does are feeding north to south?
Yep.
I guess they're feeding it feed to bed to feed is north to south, south to north.
Yep.
So and this buck's a big one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's one of the biggest ones I saw all year, if not the biggest. And I think, actually, it's also the same strategy that we were using when Jake and I shot that one back on November 13th. Basically the same thing, just evening setup. So we were
basically you were hunting the food side.
Yeah, hunting the food side more so than the bed side. And yeah, in this video that we're working on right now, we've been in there before. Yeah, and we've been in there before. We scouted it before. Hunted here. I've probably hunted here in the last 2 years, maybe 5 times, 6 times, I would say. And after several major failures, realized what was going on back there. But basically, the deer are just coming from, like Aaron said, the food to their beds, and they're bedding on secondary points off of the main ridge. And the way it sets up, there's pretty straightforward lines the way the ridge runs in comparison to the fields. Mm-hmm. And the deer are just going straight up and over that main ridge from north to south, and they're bedding on the south side of the main ridge.
With a north wind.
Yes, sorry, with a north
wind. And this buck is cruising the tops of those ridges, basically.
Yep. And when we went back and we scouted it again, we've picked several different setups along the way. Mm-hmm. And it also...
Is he going right down the highest point of the ridge, or is he right on the side?
He actually did go right across the top because he ran into that doe's trail. But something I was going to talk about real quick, too... And it's harder to dive in. I didn't dive into it in the video, so now would probably be a good time to do it. And I think I've talked about it before. But here in Iowa, and in really a lot of this area around here, I think even, like you've said, in Wisconsin, and I know in Nebraska, a lot of Missouri, there's never really, like, maybe southern Missouri that changes, but you're always, like, on top, you're flat, mm-hmm. if that's making any sense. So the highest point is... never going to fluctuate that much. No. Where sometimes in, you know,
steeper areas,
you're going to have an elevation point that changes a lot more.
Right.
Like our highest elevation more is hills whatever and... it is, you know. Yeah. So in this situation, they're doing the same thing that they do in bigger hills, but it's way more extreme in the bigger hills. They're going from, you've got a ridgetop that's running
west to east to west.
And then you've got those little secondary ridges that are running north and south off of that main ridge. In between those secondary ridges, there's a little valley. And that, in bigger hills, creates a saddle, which is two high points. And then in between those two high points, there's a low point where those two valleys meet up. And the deer are doing the same thing here. The does, especially, are coming up in the morning, and they're going through those valleys, going over, you know, where the saddle would be in bigger timber.
Right.
And then they're going off and bedding on one of those secondary points. The bucks are cruising across the top side.
They're hitting those trails that they're coming in on.
So in a bigger timber, or not a bigger timber, a bigger hill or more extreme terrain, you're really going to find those crossing trails in those saddles. So saddles are huge, especially like in southern Ohio.
But if you're hunting a cruising buck, like this.
Yeah.
He's not following the, I guess, your main deer travel that's going through those saddles. That main deer travel is all those does.
Mm-hmm.
He is crossing those things.
Right.
And that's exactly what he does here. I mean, he crosses them, and you can see him putting his nose down there and, like, hitting those trails. And eventually he hit our trail,
and he went right the wrong way.
For you guys. Yeah. I think, just to talk about a different type of habitat where they're doing the same thing, is along the river. But most of those deer were bedding on the other side of the river where we were at.
A great example.
And they were crossing the river because it wasn't very deep to feed on the other side. Most of the does, like you said. But we were hunting right along the river, and all the cruising activity was right along the side of the river.
Here's a simple way to put it, I guess. And I think I was explaining it to Greg, and we decided this may be the most basic form to explain it. Think about a field edge. You got a hard line, right? And deer trails go straight perpendicular to that edge.
There's scrapes.
There's always a scrape right at the edge of the field, right where that doe trail or deer trail comes in.
Yep.
And if you watch a buck making scrapes along a field edge, he's crossing doe trails. And he stops at those scrapes, scent checks it, and either goes back into the bedding area or goes out into the food source wherever the deer, whatever time frame.
Yeah, but that's what they rely on is their nose. Yep. That's how they figure out their world every single day. And that's exactly what they're doing. It forms an X pattern, yep. kind of. You know, I mean, that's why setting up on the heaviest sign can sometimes be a trick.
Yeah.
You know, especially.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You just see a bunch of does and young bucks.
Right, right. Yep. Because they're hitting that that solid, you know, trail or whatever that has all those tracks on it, but that perpendicular trail that we're talking about, like a field edge or whatever, in this case it's the side of that ridge, is very faint.
Yeah,
like you'll see a couple of rubs every time where they hit one of those trails, you'll see a rub. Yeah. Or you'll see a scrape.
Yeah, like, and to be honest, it's kind of weird. It's not even like a, you know, you can't walk right down like one trail. Yeah, it's like there's a little trail here and there's a little trail 20 yards down.
They just
kind of
meander from one trail to the other.
We were walking where Zach shot his buck the other day, and there's no trail where that buck came
from.
Yeah. I mean, we couldn't even find the specific trail he was on.
I would bet you, though, he's walked in that same spot before.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
You know, like if you put a trail camera up in that spot, you might get the occasional deer that walks through there, but he might be the only one you pick up. You might get a picture of him a week for the entire month of October.
It's
at 3 a.m.
It's a pretty cool setup, and it's really, like, for a cruising buck situation, I think it, you know, you're likely going to see more bucks than you would in, like, a very defined funnel, you know? Yeah. Because there's obviously a really specific reason. They're crossing where does specifically are coming from bed to food.
Yep. Well, we better get to the speed round, boys.
Speed
How much time we got left, Greg?
It's 10 minutes. Speed
10 round. 10 minutes? He said that pretty fast. Brody, you ready for the speed round?
Yep. 9 minutes and 35 seconds. Not too many right now.
Okay. Let's get to it.
How many buck beds, or how many beds do you think a mature buck has?
Oh, that's a tough question.
Really? Deal. Yeah, that's going to be a hard one for a speed round. But
we're trying to capture one and put a collar on it so we can figure it out.
I think that my opinion is on it is, depends on your area, depends on the pressure, but some areas, like, they could have 100. Some areas, they might have 7, you know?
Right.
Just depends on the buck and depends on pressure in the situation and food sources.
How far from where you guys jumped that buck in Missouri was he found dead? Do you remember what the guy said?
He said it was about 300 yards.
Okay.
They did find that buck dead, if nobody... I think we mentioned that on a previous podcast or video.
Mm-hmm.
They found that big 8-pointer dead, and he was out in that river bottom 300 yards or so away from
How can you tell that spot? How can you tell the difference between buck beds and doe beds?
Does bed in like a circular fashion a lot of the time because they rely on their eyesight to save one another, and they're always, more times than not, they're bedded in a social group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a buck bedding area could still have a bunch of beds in it,
but
they're usually bigger.
We're not saying it's specifically a buck
bed. A doe will bed in a buck bed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they will if the buck's not there,
but
you can tell by...
I was watching some footage back and we found a bed and you said, perfect. A buck bed's here sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really all that we're looking for is that one bed's there sometimes.
A buck turd in the bed. Sometimes there'll be rubs. There won't always be a rub even though, but buck turds are just tracks going out of
there. You can tell by the size of it to a certain extent and tracks that are in and around that location. And then how the bed is set up for the wind. You know, does won't bed like that.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
100%. relying on it like bucks are.
They won't bed like that some of the time, but bucks bed like that almost all the time.
How many times do you typically scout a piece of public land before you hunt it?
Sometimes zero, sometimes like...
That Missouri piece, we not scouted one time when we bumped him, you know, and then we almost killed him the next day.
Only with maps.
Yeah, only with maps.
But some places, we scout them multiple times. And the more you can, the better, especially this time of year.
What percentage of bucks do you think have shed? And this is a very area-specific question, I think.
Why don't you guys answer that one?
We've been driving
around
a lot.
You saw bucks yesterday, you and Brody did, with antlers.
We figured...
Somewhere around 50. Just from us driving around, and we've seen a lot of bucks that have shed. But like I said, that's just our area. I know around home you can drive around, go 1 mile one way, and all the bucks are still holding, go 1 mile the other way, and all the bucks have shed. So that's kind of a...
Just crapshoot, I think.
Either drive around or run trail cameras to give you the best idea in your area, I would say.
Public land stands, hang on or climber?
Depends on where you're at.
Here, hang on.
If there's a lot of straight trees.
Straight trees.
Down in the south or, even out where you guys are at.
Southern Ohio, I would use a climber.
When you hunt in the mornings, are you already thinking that the buck is bedded or are you planning on him coming back into that bed?
Either or.
Yep.
It kind of depends. That one that me and Sean killed... on the 30th in 2016, the one that was down in the swamp, he was coming out of the beds at 8 o'clock in the morning to hit some scrapes on the downwind side of the bedding area.
the buck that we shot in Nebraska, we literally could hear him in the bedding area when we were setting the stand up, heard him bed down, and then he got up and came. We were just in the bedding area in that situation. So,
and that goes back to taking your time when you're setting up the stand and making noise, because obviously we were making a little bit of noise, but then we'd stop and just listen for that buck, and he was never even...
Many times, if you're right up next to the bed, they're close. Like, if it's at first light, they're either in it or they're really, really close.
How much do you guys rely on topo maps, and what do you look for if you do?
We rely on those a fair amount, especially in the hillier stuff.
Even if it's not, though, I think even just a subtle rise can really make a difference. Like where Zach shot his buck, there's a couple just mounds basically in this marsh, and they're just trampled down with beds where the deer can just get a little bit of an advantage.
When you're looking at hilly terrain in the rut, for example, you're looking for the leeward side of hills. And you can see that on topo map.
Explain leeward.
Leeward is the downwind side of the hill. So if you're standing on top of the hill that runs north and south, you have a west wind, the east side of the hill is the leeward side.
Yep.
And bucks will cruise, you know, that, well, a lot of folks say that one-third elevation line or that military crest, especially out in Ohio where you got steeper terrain, they'll cruise that. But they don't necessarily do that in every situation. However, you do notice them cruising somewhere on that leeward side with that wind.
What can they expect from you guys for turkey season?
Oh, we'll be doing all kinds of turkey stuff.
Hopefully a lot of gunshots.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll be doing all kinds of turkey stuff.
Getting muddy.
Public a bunch.
Not showering a lot.
Ooh.
Yeah. We'll probably go on some trips, some out-of-state trips. Maybe go down south again. I really want to go down to Alabama and hunt public down there.
I mean, we wanted to last year, but, you know.
We were in Mississippi and Arkansas. We could.
Last year I went 11 days. That was Mississippi. What do you think we can get more than that this year?
You mean showerless days? Yeah. Yes, we could potentially. I don't know if I want to.
They say after a month that you just like stop smelling bad, your body just cleans.
We were so primitive in Mississippi last year. Like, we'd run out of batteries for the lights and everything. We were just crouched on the ground next to this little fire, like just taking pieces of bread and putting a knife of peanut butter in
there. Nebraska was pretty good this year, too.
Yeah, Nebraska was pretty, primitive.
Yeah, it was survival mode. Once you get past, you know, day 7 or 8 and you run out of food, you just eat peanut butter, bread.
One of the funniest things about camping and hunting is the crouch and eat. Like, you just kind of, like, are crouched in your own little area.
You don't have a chair.
No, or silverware, so you just got a hunk of meat in your hand.
Yeah, that's it, pretty much.
Cool.
When faced with trees that are less than perfect for stands, would you rather stay close in a subpar tree or move a little farther away into a better location?
Oh, if you're bow hunting, you have to be where you have to be.
Yeah. I'd answer that question for someone that's probably hunting by themselves, though, too. I mean, a lot of times you can get in a less than ideal tree as far as cover and be okay if you're hunting by yourself, but we have two people to hide up in the tree, obviously.
Yeah, and that is more difficult.
Just hide on the back side of the tree from where you...
I can't tell you. I mean, like we were talking about earlier, we set up in a perfect tree. We got set up in great, but if there was a little crooked tree 30 yards ahead of us, well, that's the one we should have been in. Because that's the one we would have killed the buck out of. We didn't kill him out of the perfect tree, if that tells you anything. It's not always the case, but you want to be where, like, you'll know where you need to be to get an ethical shot at that trail or whatever it is.
When a mature buck gets up from his bed, will he walk into the wind, or do you think, regardless of the wind, he will have a specific destination?
No, they'll leave regardless. Doesn't really matter. They've got, usually where that bed is, they have all kinds of destinations, like a bicycle wheel spokes from that spot. You know, they may have water to the south, they may have acorns to the west, they may have ag fields to the east, they may have does to the north. And depending on the time of the year and what they're keying in on, that's going to depend on where you want to set up. In the instance of the buck in Missouri earlier, he was going to the northwest onto the acorns. You know, if it was rut, he could have been going to the east into the doe bedding. But, yeah.
Have you guys used the bump and dump method when hunting a certain buck?
Not hunting a certain buck.
More or less that one, because that's the one sure that ran out of there.
Yeah.
That was a bump and dumper.
Yeah. But that was a bump and dump him a few days later. Yeah. Like, we almost bump and dumped one last year that day. Remember that at, down at the marsh?
We should. Yeah, and we should have if we'd been on top of
our game. We were going down
game.
Through there, and we bumped a big one and a small buck and a doe, and they didn't have any idea what happened. And me and Zach are sitting there looking for trees, and we're like, you know what? We should probably be ready because he could pop up at any. Wait a minute, there he is. You know, well, and we look up and like he's at 30 yards coming back.
He got split away from his doe.
Yeah, that's a situation where he's split from his doe that's hot that he's bedded with. There's a little satellite buck bedded beside him.
And he didn't have a clue. She just
came back twice.
Twice. Yeah.
He came back that time when we should have killed him after we'd spooked him. And I mean, within 15 minutes, he came back.
Yep.
He saw us busted out of there. Then we got the stands hung, and right at dark, he popped out about 100 yards from us blowing and stomping, you know. He was, it was interesting to watch him because he wanted to be back in there. He didn't know what the heck we were and wanted to find that doe.
That's it.
All right, I got a question for you guys. If Jake holds this antler and I hold this antler and we fight, who's going to win?
Leave it in the comments below.
Yeah, let us know what you think.
That's going to do it. Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thank you.